Hello, my name is Carol May Wittick, and welcome to Her Conversations, Tools for the Awakening Woman. HER is an acronym for Higher Energetic Resonance. This is the optimal state to embody in order to attract our highest desires. Who's the awakening woman? She's a woman who's seeking a greater possibility in her reality and looking for solutions. She knows being awakened is not a lofty ideal, but a necessity. If she can transform herself, she can change the world. Her conversations will introduce you to talented women who will speak to your spirituality, sensuality, and soul. They share their stories and explain how they are in service to the world. So let their words and these conversations embolden and inspire you. This week my guest is She Tolls, who I've come to know because of the feedback she has given me about her conversations. I wanted to try something different and invite a listener, an awakening woman who the podcast is for, onto the show and find out more about her life. She has made changes in her life that exemplify an awakening, such as changes in her outlook, what she eats, and incorporating a spiritual practice into her life. While her work is still for the most part in the corporate world, she is a trained yoga teacher and has taught in the past and plans to return in the future. So listen in as we talk about her experiences of veganism, being a woman of colour in yoga, and also her favourite guests on Her Conversations. And as always, I start each episode by asking my guest. HER is an acronym for Higher Energetic Resonance. When do you feel at your most HER?
Mostly when I am in my kitchen. So I have to think about that one. So again, like I said, I do listen to the podcast regularly, so I do know the questions. And from the time I started listening to the podcast, I started asking myself some of these questions just to see what the answers would be. Mm-hmm. Like I said, mainly I thought about it when I go in my kitchen, because that way I know for sure I am in control and in charge of me, my health, my well-being, and my being. Mm-hmm. Another time I actually feel that, when I do yoga, but particularly when I do it outdoors, I love doing it outdoors because it's nothing like getting just being in nature and in that natural energy of nature.
That's perfect. Thank you. And can you just talk a little bit about who you are, what your journey is, what's got you to this point in time?
I was thinking about this morning before this interview, and I had to think I am actually 20 years into this journey. Mm-hmm. Realize it had been that long. How I got here was back in 1998. I was having extremely painful periods. And I couldn't figure out why. I mean, it was just to a point where I remember leaving work a couple of times. So I went to see a doctor about it and got a diagnosis of uterine fibroids. So at that time, I didn't know a whole lot about it. I think maybe one person I'd heard about had them, or I might have seen a documentary on TV. It wasn't really clear on it. And then it happened to me. So from that point, I knew I did not want to be sliced and diced on. So I just really started looking into ways to heal naturally. From that point, I think that it was just a matter of time. I didn't do anything overnight, but it was just a matter of over time, just reducing things or eliminating things from my life. And one of the first things I started with, of course, was the diet. So that was kind of slow. And then the next thing, you see, that was 98. I started, got into yoga in 2001. It was something I had always wanted to do, but just wasn't sure how to go about it. And I remember watching Oprah. And she had the yoga teacher, Rodney Yee, on her show. And I don't know what it was. And that really, I saw that episode and I just decided I really wanted to give it a try. And at the time, I was living in Atlanta, and I remember going out that day looking for a yoga mat. And this was, again, 2001, could not find a yoga mat anywhere. I mean, I literally went around for about 2 hours to find a yoga mat. And I had to go online to order one. But what I found interesting was that following year 2002, yoga mats were everywhere. So that was very interesting. And I knew once I started doing yoga, it was something I wanted to teach, particularly with Black people, because I feel like that's something that we really could benefit from, even now. and started teaching in 2005. But up to that point, I was still, again, living in Atlanta. I live in Tampa now. Before I even moved to Tampa, the only yoga class physically that I went to was at a local gym. You're sitting in a room, you're doing yoga, trying to be zen, trying to be quiet. And then on one side of you, you have like the clanging of dead weights. Other side of you is a spin class. Started doing it on my own through watching a lot of yoga TV shows. And also, there's a bookstore chain here in the U.S. called Barnes & Noble. And at the time, they had offered online classes. And one of the classes they offered was yoga. And that's actually how I started doing yoga. So I always say that I kind of started doing yoga through the back door, so to speak. Yeah. So, and then once I moved to Tampa, I started going to a yoga studio, yoga classes, and decided I wanted to teach it. And actually met the teacher. He turned out to be my teacher who was offering classes. And then I decided to go ahead and get certified for the 200-hour certification. So, and I've been certified to teach ever since 2005. I have not been teaching all that time. So it's been off and on since 2005.
Is it that you want to go back into teaching full time, or you've not built up a client list or a school or anything like that behind yourself that's meant that you've gone in and out? What's moved you in and out of it?
At the time, I was still really new. And then I did a little bit of teaching just really to get my feet wet. And then again, that teacher that certified me, there were four teachers, but I worked mainly with him. He actually opened up a studio, and I actually got a chance to teach at his studio for maybe just under a year. But again, at least with my classes, there did not seem to be a really large following, so to speak. And so at that point, I just decided, you know what, I just really want to get away from teaching particularly I'm not a big fan of studio teaching through a studio. So I just kind of took a break and was just doing my own thing, just doing yoga, still maintaining my own personal practice. Cause that's really a big thing. If you're going to teach, it's important to maintain your own practice. But I knew that I wanted to teach outside of the yoga studio system. So back in 2010, I met this woman who owned a Reiki shrine locally. And I met her through a friend. Again, I met her through a friend that was through Qigong. Mm-hmm. Whole different story. But she actually had someone. She does practices Reiki there. She would have classes. She offered Reiki certification. And then there was also someone who taught yoga there, and he left. I think he was about to leave. And I told her, you know, that I taught yoga. She's looking for an instructor. But it was actually a couple of years before I got to teach yoga there. And that was just mainly some things that were going on in my life at the time. So I finally was able to go in and teach. I started teaching at her place in 2012. And when I started teaching at the time, I started in November. And by the end of December, what happened is at the end of the year, she closed the shrine for 2 weeks. And at the time, I was only consistently getting just three students. And I remember standing on the last day and praying. It's like, you know what? Do I continue to do this? And I want to get back into teaching. Do I continue to do this? Or is it even worth it? And there was one of the students who told me, she said, you know, I have some friends who are really interested in learning and doing yoga. And, you know, I'll bring them, you know, because they're paced. I think they can work with us. I said, okay. And I'm standing there praying. And then when I finished praying, I looked up. It's a caravan of cars that pulled up. I said, okay, this is good. And I went from three students. I think that day, particularly, they had seven. That was after that first month. And I remember I always would share with the class. I said, you know, I didn't think I would last three. I didn't think over the last 6 months. And I actually just stopped teaching back in March. So that was actually after 5 years. So that was a 5-year stretch that I did that. And at the time when I stopped back in March, again, I am on a break. It was just sort of a break because I was doing it consistently, literally every Saturday. And then I had to break it down some so that I can at least have some time to myself. So that's one of the main reasons why. And then also, too, the time, it was perfect timing because that particular property went up for sale. Mm. So she's moved to a new location. I haven't been to the new location yet. At some point, once I do, I will go back to teaching there, but not to the extent that I was.
And one of the things that I know about, or I know since speaking to you about when you were teaching, is that you teach senior women more so than anything before. Can you speak about what you think the specific needs are for senior women coming into yoga and how you kind of brought your knowledge to that?
That's really interesting you asked that, because it was what's interesting is that was not necessarily the audience I was seeking. But I mean, it's a good thing, because the one thing I liked about teaching at the Reiki Shrine was that I got a really diverse crowd of people versus at a yoga studio. And it was one of those cases where, you know, a lot of the women came. And I know the one student I always referred to, she came with that caravan of students when I expanded. She actually had done her first yoga class. She had done at a gym. Mm. And she's not in the best of shape. And, you know, she had had some things like ex-smoker. She said when she left that class at the gym, she was just in tears. So she liked the way I taught, because the way I do it, I do teach hatha, but it's mostly on a slower scale, so a lot more gentle. We do some movement, some strength, and some stretch. So I think that's mainly the big thing that works with the other senior senior crowd, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Especially because I think too with women, by the time we reach a certain age, we lose a lot of muscle mass, and I think yoga is one of those things that's really good for that, because I'm all for working with your own body weight versus like dead weights, you know, because when you think about it realistically, you carry pretty much your body weight on your two feet, you know, just by standing. So, you know, I think it's when you get the opportunity, you know, like even like something as simple as I call it a yoga push-up instead of a full push-up, like even if you're doing like something as simple as plank, you're actually holding or carrying your full body weight, and you're working with your body weight to strengthen the body.
How did the other women find out?
Yeah, they loved it. And because I would tailor the classes to what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then I use myself an example because I'm not young, you know, and I just felt like, you know, it's good. They see that I can do it. It's like, oh, okay. You know, it's sort of an inspiration for them as well.
Mm-hmm. And what was the age of the most senior participant?
At the time, it seemed the most senior student that I ever had was at the time 83 years old. Mm-hmm. Was when I first started teaching, like 2012, 2013. And that was interesting because it was like three generations of them who came. She came with her daughter and then her grandson. So her grandson was actually one of the few men that I've ever had in my class. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. And the way I got her to do it, when she came to my class, she was with her daughter, and she actually sat in the corner. She just watched. She didn't even, you know, she didn't get on the mat or anything. So I joked with her. I said, okay. I said, well, I said, if I, the daughter's like, well, she can't, you know, get on the mat. I said, well, that's fine. I said, tell you what. I said, how about, I said, if I get you a chair, I said, will you do yoga with us? And she said, yes. So that following week, they came to class, laid out the mats. We set up a chair. She sat in a chair and she did yoga with us. And she actually did yoga with us. I can't remember how long they were there. I think they might have come to me for maybe about a year or so. But the whole time, you know, she's engaged with the class. And I guess another good thing about that, too, was that the family is from Colombia. So the daughter did spoke pretty good English. The mom didn't speak much English. And at the time, the son didn't speak much English. So, and I speak a little Spanish. I mean, you know, enough to get by.
Yeah, me too.
but it was really good. It was fun. So I was just really excited that I got it. Like I said, just joking with her. And that's just the thing with yoga, because a lot of people get caught up in thinking, oh, you know, I'm not flexible. So well, that's why you do yoga, to become flexible. You don't have to be flexible to do yoga. You do yoga. You do yoga to get flexible. It's not just restricted to a mat. You can do yoga. There is chair yoga. You know, you can do yoga in a chair. So again, you know, I just, my thing with that is no excuses. I can find a way to get you to do it.
One thing I wanted to ask you, the tagline for this podcast is Tools for the Awakening Woman. Mm-hmm. And so as a listener as well, how, what things have spoken out to you as because it, the audience that I'm drawing in are women who are on their path anyway, and they kind of resonate with the guests anyway. So what kind of things have helped you in your awakening? Because, you know, whether you want to call it that, you moving from making the changes that you've done in your life, you said you changed your diet, you got into different practices like the Qigong and the yoga, is an awakening of sorts. So what have you heard over the past few episodes that have inspired you maybe to incorporate into what you're doing?
Ooh, that's kind of tough, because I think everything that I've listened to was like, wow, I can relate to that. I've done that, this. I think the one that really resonated with me that I least expected, or should I say the podcast that resonated with me, that I probably would say almost least expected to resonate with me, was the one you had with Vanetta Rather.
Female preacher. Yeah.
And it was like, I got really caught up, because it's one of those things. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of organized religion. I am a person. I did I grew up going to church, but I didn't grow up in the church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that she expressed that I always agreed with, felt that, you know, because I just have this thing as far as like where religion is concerned, I find it very interesting that the majority of the followers, I wouldn't even know, I wouldn't necessarily majority, but I'd say a large number of followers are women, yet we are not allowed to be in any positions that I put power in quotes. So that I find very interesting. Mm-hmm. So was the podcast, the one with the, I don't remember her name, but the sister who does the, I think her, it's called Oya?
Stacy, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so it's like, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the things, and you know, with me and teaching, I will teach whoever wants to learn. I don't discriminate from that standpoint. But again, I you know, I am a Black woman. And my goal is to really get, you know, inspire and really to help a lot of as many as I can. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know what that's like. And I know with us, especially from, like you said, the whole perspective of, I guess I'll say Eastern philosophies like yoga, like Qigong, anything like that. A lot of us are just really leery, you know, again, that's where you get the whole, where especially with our background, religion comes into play. Mm-hmm. And also just a big thing too, I don't know about in the UK or where you are, but I know especially with a lot of Black Americans, there are a lot of things that if we don't see other Black people do, we are not doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, you get kind of nervous, like, oh, you know. So I'm just a firm believer, you know, that sometimes, you know what, if I can be the one to introduce that to people, to bring it to people, by all means, let me just step up and do it.
I'm with you. And it's interesting that you spoke to both of them. Stacey, I've known for a couple of years anyway. And I wanted to, you know, I told her like late last year that I was starting a podcast series. So it was always going to happen that she was going to be on. It was just a question of, you know, getting our times aligned and everything like that. But, and I 100% understand the work that she does and why she does it. I think initially I was like, well, isn't that going against the all is one and one is all kind of thing? But mm-hmm. then I realized still, and maybe I think it's some younger, but also in terms of like the generations before me, do feel a lot of the time that if they are not represented, they don't feel that something is for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm kind of like, maybe we're similar in that I'm a stubborn person and I'm like, I want to know that. So it's like, is there no one else there? Then it's like, then that means I'll be the first, you know? So
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
there's part of that athlete in me that still wants to be, you know, it's like, it doesn't bother me that, that there isn't representation, but then I appreciate how the majority need to feel that they're not going to feel out of place in there, that there's going to be somebody else who looks like them, who understands what they might be feeling and why also they might be feeling that way as well. So from that point of view, and also when you're talking about Vanetta as well, her episode, I grew up in the church. I grew up in the church as in I was a pastor's daughter. You don't get more grown up in the church than that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. You know, pastor's kid. Circumstances change. So, you know, but I was still always really, you know, affiliated with the church. But obviously now, as is obvious, my path is kind of, it's less religious, more spiritual, but I still a lot of those leanings, you know, put a good gospel tune on and I'm there. Mm-hmm. Even though sometimes the lyrics are like, well, okay. But, you know, it's still embedded deep, deep, deep down. Like, you know, and I'll always listen to a bit of gospel music, but when it comes to actually needing to be in the church, I still got thoughts of what it was like. And a lot of the time what it was like was there are a lot of rules, more rules than made sense at the time. And actually my mom moved us because my dad was a pastor and then unfortunately he died, and eventually my mom moved us from what you'd consider to be a black church into Church of England church, which is a Christian church, a very Church of England. Yeah, I don't know if they call it anything else. You usually have like Church of England and Roman Catholic are the kind of two threads that are working alongside each other. I don't want to say against. And so then my religion, my church going from age maybe 7 or 8 all the way up till I was a teen and was able to make my own choices, was actually in a very staid environment, because churches like English, white English churches are very different from black churches across the world. Mm-hmm. You know, two, I mean, you only have to look at, what was his name? Is it Reverend Curry, who held the service at the royal wedding recently? I don't know if you saw the clip. You know,
yeah, so I think that's some of it. Yes.
Yeah. So that kind of preaching is, I remember what that kind of preaching does to people on a Sunday morning, you know, whereas mm-hmm. then the churches that I grew up with, is the preaching wasn't like that. So it was just very kind of like, you know, it was inspirational, but it didn't have that kind of lift in it. You could see how there was a little bit of discomfort, and when people are uncomfortable, they laugh and everything like that. So that was kind of the reaction mm-hmm. from it. But it was interesting to speak to Vanetta just to get an update on where the church is and also where women are in the church. And I just found her fresh and inspiring. And as she was talking to me, she was preaching to me, I was there.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, I think one of the things I liked about her too, because when I thought about it, again, I lived in Atlanta. The church that I did belong to was founded and headed by a woman.
Mm.
And that was always interesting, because when I would share that with people, I'd get the side eye like, what are you talking about, she? It's like, well, what's wrong with that? And she would actually share with us, you know, going to some of the Christian conferences, and you know, she would be one of maybe a few, fewer than five female preachers.
Mm.
And, you know, again, that whole thing with women not necessarily coming together, you know, they kind of pit them against each other, or they'd be scared to look at each other or acknowledge each other. And, you know, just some of the discriminations. And I'm like, wow, really? You know, that I just still find that interesting. So.
Mm, mm. Yeah, it's, I think it's still there, just like generally anyway, isn't it? That kind of pitting of women against each other, unfortunately. What are you seeing in the spiritual landscape and the wellness landscape that's coming forward that's making you excited in terms of how you're going to expand your life and your journey and your work and the things that you want to go in? Because there's always new things coming up, but what's inspiring you to really delve in?
You know, actually, I can't think of anything that's necessarily new so much as, and I think from a social media perspective, again, I'm really happy to see our numbers, again, with Black people, because I am part of, for yoga, not only yoga, part of not only a network of Black yoga teachers. I think I'm part of a couple of social media like Facebook. And yeah, Facebook mainly. But between that and then also too with not only that, but Black vegans, because again, I think there's this myth that we don't exist because all we do is sit around, dare I say it, munching on fried chicken. You know the stereotypes. And again, that's one of those things that's still, and not even just among the wider audience, but even amongst us. You know, again, it's still one of those things where, you know, you say that you don't eat that. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's almost like they're ready to kill you. You know, you say you're plant-based. What? Plants, not deep fried and grease. Like, no, just straight up plants. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. Because it's one of those things when I was looking, it's like, oh my God, you know, I'm just so excited to see all of these, you know, I don't want to say organizations, but I guess, like I said, from a social media perspective, groups, I'll say, I've seen all these groups that exist that are out there. And I have to laugh because even like with me, I get all these friend requests and stuff. And I'm laughing. I'm thinking, okay, I don't know these people. They don't know me, but it's just really interesting. I said, you know, it just goes to show, even though so many of us out there, we're still looking for each other. Mm. You know, and I still find... Again, 2018, I still find that very interesting.
Yes, great. Do you know, and it's funny that when you're talking about when you, I wanted to say come out, but you know, when I told my family that I wanted to go plant-based, and at the time I was vegan, now there's a cheese drops in. So, you know, I have to hold mine. Otherwise I'd be plant-based. So yeah, but for the first, when I really went into it, I sort of transitioned slowly. And then there was a period mm-hmm. of time where I had like a good 6 months of like raw food, but we had an unusually, kind of like what we're having now, unusually warm summer. Okay. I live in England, remember? So this makes a whole load of difference. So I did it for about 6 months and I felt really good. I don't necessarily feel the need to be completely raw food, mm-hmm. But plant-based for sure. It's like, it seems like a different lifetime that I meet now. But when I decided to announce it to the family, people's reaction it was almost as if they took it personally.
Yes, yep, that's it.
Isn't it bizarre? And I remember
because about that too. So yeah.
Because my mom was still alive at the time, and she was just saying, "But you've always eaten. You ate it since you were a little girl. I used to give it to you and everything." Like, yeah, but I'm not going to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. Or I tell other people, and they'd be like, "Yeah, but I'm okay. You know, I'm going." And it's like, this is not the conversation that we're having. It's just I'm letting you know that if ever I come around your house. Don't confuse yourself with anything. Just, you know, what are you going to eat? Vegetables. Just vegetables. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just because there's the vegetable.
You're going to top it off with water.
Imagine that. It's like, is that all you're having? It's like, that's all I need. When I go off on a different direction, that's when I have problems. Mm-hmm. It's always that way. How long have you been vegan?
Oh, since January of 2007.
Mm. And are you and raw? Again,
yes. And again, like you said, that was one of those things too. Again, and at the time I did it, I thought I was, you know, wow, I should have done this a long time ago. But, you know, everything happens when it should. Mm. It was still, you know, still it wasn't as much information like it is now. And again, I was just kind of going and growing through it on my own. And, you know, and that's one of the big things I usually say is like, you know, you do have to stay educated because, again, it's real easy. Again, you fall into not necessarily falling, backsliding or anything. So I know a lot of people do. But again, just being able to stand up for yourself, you know, again, as soon as you tell somebody that, like all of a sudden everybody's got something to say and then you don't necessarily have really quick clapbacks, you know, or, you know, just even just some helpful information that you can give them where it's like, okay, you know what, just leave it alone. So again, I just had to pretty much do a lot of that, mainly for my own growth. As far as going raw, and that's how I came to your podcast, by the way, because I am a follower of Reverend Anita.
Okay. Yeah.
I was looking for something on her on YouTube and I found her interview with you and I started following you. So
thank you, Anita.
But yeah, but I think what happened was there was a restaurant here in the Tampa area. It was a vegan and raw food restaurant. And that's really how I started getting into some raw food. And over time, again, it's just started looking for myself to doing it. And what I had started doing too, like back in, I'll say the early 2010s. I can't remember exactly when, but what I would do, as a matter of fact, this is my birth month. So I'm a July baby. My birth is now less than 2 weeks. But I started.
Happy birthday for them.
Oh, thank you. I started going raw for my birthday just for the month, just to see how I liked it. And I just decided, you know what? I don't really want to go back to cooked food. You know what, just try it and stick with it. And it's been now almost 2 years. So what I did 2016, for my birthday, I went stayed local. I wound up going down to Sarasota, which is about an hour away from me. And I actually met two women who inspired me to just go ahead and continue with that journey. And they were both, as a matter of fact, it's interesting because they're locations. They both have businesses that are across the street from each other. I don't think they're related to each other in any way. One woman, as a matter of fact, she's British, owns a wellness center. And as an extension of that wellness center, she has a raw food cafe, which is really good. And then the other woman, she owns an out-and-out raw food restaurant, and she's Russian. And I was reading her story and I said, you know what, I can do this. And again, the third person, I think I mentioned, yeah, Karen
Nola.
She had a workshop that she did and I decided to do it that year. I said, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. I'll see, and if I can stick with it for a year, you know, I'm good. If not, you know, I have no desire to go back to eating any animal food of any kind. I'm still a plant-based queen. That's just that. And, you know, I have not had any desire or taste for any cooked food since then. So I still, again, it's still a growth process. Still just doing my own thing. And, you know, again, I'm in the Tampa area. So right now we're still not a whole lot. I think there are a couple of places that I know, and trust me, I know all of them. They're not that many places, but again, at the same time, I'm still doing what I can. I have a couple of, I don't want to call them cookbooks, but recipe books where I go in and just play around with stuff. So again, just not wanting to be dependent on outside food, but at the same time, just, you know, just step up on my own and do what I can.
Are you a fully kitted out raw vegan kitchen then? Do you have all the kit?
Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say?
Do you have all the kit? Are you, you know, kind of Vitamix, hydrator, dehydrator, all of that?
As a matter of fact, I do. And the last thing that I finally got a dehydrator. That was the very last thing that I got. I do have one, and I do use. I don't use it as often. I work full time, so I'm not a full time yoga teacher or anything like that. I work a corporate job, so some weekends I get in there, and one of my absolute favorite foods ever are mangoes. I love mangoes.
Oh, wow. Yes, of course.
And the one thing I do, again, one of my biggest, one of my guiltiest pleasures are dried mangoes. So the first thing I did when I got my dehydrator was dry me some mangoes.
Good for you.
I love it because I love doing my own. I did, yeah. So I've done that. Do my dry every now and again. I dried mangoes. And I think the one big thing with the dehydrator is, and I do it. You know, when I do the dehydration, I dry things very low heat. So like, what is it, 105 degrees? But I guess the only thing with that is just having the patience, because it's not like you're baking something and it's going to take, say, 45 minutes to an hour max. We're talking like
hours.
Yes. You know, and if you get something, if you can get something dry to 6 hours, that's good. So you're thinking, we're talking in terms of like 10 to 12 hours. So I've done that. Also, I love kale chips. So I made my own. I'm still in the process of perfecting it. So it's a work in progress. But, you know, I do have it. So I'm just really happy. It's like, that was the big thing. I was just, oh, me and that dehydrator. So, I got to get one. I got to get one. I'm scared. Got it. And I'm happy. And I feel like it is pretty much complete. But yes, I swear by my Vitamix. As a matter of fact, I've had my Vitamix now for about 10 years. I just replaced the container.
Oh, really? So you got 10 years out of your job.
Yes,
that's good.
Yes. And it's still going. It's still yeah, I have that. I have the, what is it? The little spiralizer. I have the and I have the knives, the peeler, all of it. All of it.
I've got a semi kit. I haven't gone to a dehydrator yet. And I did have actually a Blendtec last year, and then long story that I won't go into, I don't have it anymore. So I'm just like,
yeah, but they
were good. They were good. They're not as big over here as they are in the US, but I enjoyed having it while I did.
Okay.
Do you follow Tani Raw by the, is it Tani Raw? Do you Tani Raw? She's on, TANNY Raw. I'm sure it's Tani Raw. She's on Instagram and she's on YouTube. She does some really good, and even though I'm not raw, I just like watching her, one, because of her personality anyway, but she does some amazing things, and she's always doing like crackers and things like that in her dehydrator if you ever want, you know, inspiration from that.
Yeah, that's the one thing I haven't done yet. I haven't gotten the crackers yet. I'm going to get there, but not yet. Tani Raw, is that TANNY?
TANNY. Tani Raw.
I think I have heard. I did hear, I know, I listened to a lot of, there was one of the, I can't remember, recently one of the Raw Summit. You know, they do like the Raw Food Summits.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to those. I think I did hear her interview. And yeah. Recently, like within the last couple of months or so.
Yeah, I've been following her because she got named by someone else that I actually don't follow anymore, but I just keep on her Instagram and watch her YouTube videos, and she's really inspirational because she came from she's like a single mother, she's got two kids and a grandchild now as well, but she put herself through a raw food diet, and if she shows before pictures, like her eyes change color, she got rid of, like, she, you know, her eyes were very brown, and now if you see any pictures of her, her eyes are very big, very blue. And she transitioned, she changed. She's like, the body's in incredible shape, you know, for, I don't even know what age she's at now. She started to do bodybuilding contests and everything like that. So she's kind of really taken it on. One, to prove that, you know, just because you eat plants, you're not going to keel over and die as well, which is the misconception.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time it's like, yes, you're just going to sustain yourself on rabbit food, but rabbits look all right. You know, that's the usual thing as well. How do you usually answer that one? You know, when people, meat eaters always will, if you tell them that you're plant-based, will be like, oh, where are you going to get your protein from? Where do you get your protein?
Yeah, like vegetables, fruit, nuts, seeds.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Yeah, and you know, and I just want to sort of rewind and go back a bit. Something else you're talking about with Tani Raw. The whole thing, people don't realize, people seem to forget too. Everybody who's considered, I guess, you know, a health nut or healthy or whatever, don't always start that way. I mean, it's get there from some sort of pain or, you know, disease or dis-ease, discomfort in the body. So I don't know. It's, you know, not everybody starts out that, you know, if you think about anybody who's been, who's like, sort of like really into the health scene or clean health scene, it's like you look at their stories, it's like you think about where they came from. It's like, mm.
And I think it's the story that draws you into them as well, because in order for you to, for want of a better word, follow them or engage with them, mm-hmm. you want to know that they've got from point A to point B. Because if you've just got someone who is just been the pinnacle of health all that time, then you're looking at an athlete, which is no bad thing, but it's not necessarily going to draw everybody in. They're not going to be able to see themselves there. You want to see pictures of, like, for instance, Lisa Nichols, and like a lot of the time when she's, I've watched her talk and talk about the way that she trains people to talk as well, in that you can't just go up on stage and let everyone tell everyone how great you are at that moment in time. They need to know that you were at that point and then you got there. You know, that's how you mm-hmm. engage and bring people in, is actually show them there was a starting point and they can do it too. Because people always see themselves you know, we're all in some sort of pain, or we all want some sort of improvement in our lives. And if we can see a trajectory, then we're going to be more inclined to listen to what someone said, as opposed to them just turning up going, my life is great. It's like, well, that's really nice, but you know, you don't understand where I'm at, you know, so you need mm-hmm. to, they need to understand where they are. I wanted to ask you actually, because you said at the moment you're working full-time in the corporate, in a corporate environment. How do you find the corporate world as a spiritual woman in the corporate world?
I'm not a fan of it. I've not been a fan of corporate and I've been in corporate since I was 21, and it's been more than 30 years now. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where the one thing I like less than corporate is pseudo corporate.
You need to explain that to me.
So what I mean by this, I have worked for companies where, I mean, because, you know, corporate is what it is. It's structured, you know, it's a plan, it's laid out. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Then you have companies that want to be corporate, and, you know, they're corporate one day, but they're not the next. And kind of like kids making up, you know, kids playing a game, making up their own rules.
Right.
Either you are or you're not. But, you know, again, it's one of those things where, you know, you abide by the rules, but at the same time, you have to know who you are. Mm. I think about that a lot, too, because again, doing the type of work that I do and where I work, it is not like hardcore corporate. You know, it's casual.
So in the world at large, there is more awareness of things like meditation and yoga and wellness and all that kind of thing. And also many people spending years in the corporate structure and just getting to a point where it's really not for them and changing their life completely. Are they still the minority? Is that kind of feel still the minority, or are there more kind of spiritually minded practices or more esoteric acceptance within a corporate structure?
You know what? It's interesting you asked that. I think to some degree, yes. But, you know, I guess if you talk to individual people. But with that said, I'm glad you mentioned that. One of the last really corporate jobs I had, that's actually how I got into Qigong. Mm-hmm. And that was because, and this was a large, very well-known corporate. I'm not going to say the name. Very well-known corporation. Finance. And one of the guys I worked with at the time, he was also vegan, plant-based. And we met each other. We kind of ran into each other at there's a local Vietnamese restaurant in my area that they don't do it anymore, but they used to, they had a pretty extensive plant-based menu. So what they would do is they would take that vegan menu and they would actually hold monthly meetups of just the vegan menu, vegan items, and have a buffet. So I actually met him there. We ran into each other and he told me, I knew that the company offered at lunchtime like Qigong and Tai Chi, and I was interested in learning that. And he said, oh, you should come. I was like, well, you know, at the time I was a contractor, so I didn't think I would be invited, you know, be welcome. He said, no, it's open to everybody. So I went, and that's how I actually met the woman who taught Qigong in mm-hmm. Tai Chi. And that's how I got into it. So you mentioned that there are quite a few people who are, you know, leaning towards, you know, that way of living. I mean, again, you still have the standard people who don't. And then even to expand on that, the company where I work now we have lunch, like free lunch every week. And what they do, you know, they try to get something for everybody. You have places where they have a lot of meat dishes, chicken and so on, but they also incorporate some vegetables and stuff too. So, and again, still on along those lines, I'm not really out to everybody that I'm plant-based at work. And one of the main reasons being I had a job there. I had one place where I worked and I was, you know, out about it. And I pretty much, when I think back on it, it's like I was just basically bullied.
Wow.
And it was not a good feeling. It's like, you know, it's bad enough I'm like standing out for all the wrong reasons. You know, it's bad enough I'm the only Black person on the team. And then not only am I Black, I'm plant-based. So I was like...
Just be winding people up like that.
God. I actually was friends with a guy on that job who was also, who was vegan. And he ultimately, I mean, we both left the job, left that place. And one of the reasons, he got bullied a lot too. And I think the difference with us, he was one of those people where I learned too that everybody plant-based is, well, I know we're not all the same, but I mean, we all come to it for different reasons. I came to it from a health perspective, whereas he came into it from an animal-based love of animals. I do find that there is a big difference between those factions. So people who go to it for love of animals versus, you know, let's just say animal welfare first over health versus health over everything else. So I do find it to be a difference. But yeah, we were both both vegan in that environment, and it was not good.
No, there's definitely a difference between your militant vegans. Mm-hmm. It can be, you only have to see how they are with each other online, even between themselves, you know, the fighting that goes on between the vegans and who's more woke vegan than the other. And it's a lot, you know, and I came to it from health, but then you kind of watch those, you watch a few of the films on the list, you know, the kind mm-hmm. of like vegan 101 films that you need to watch. And then you start to you kind of look at the animals and go, well, you know, what's the difference between a dog and a chicken? Why does one deserve to kind of be in my house and the other one not deserve to live? Some of them not even deserve to develop, you know? So,
Yeah, you're right. One on your house is your pet versus one being on your plate is your meal. So, yeah.
But then, and can we be sure, you know, you don't even know what you're being fed nowadays. So
That's true.
Meat is whatever they say it's going to be. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you. The questions that I ask everyone at the end of the podcast as well. So I want to ask those questions of you. And obviously, as a listener, you're familiar with what the questions are. Firstly is, what is the best piece of advice a woman has ever given to you?
Okay. Is it okay if I give two?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I've shared this one with you. There's one from, the pastor of the church. Well, she didn't call herself a pastor. She referred to herself as a teacher of the church that I belong to in Atlanta. One thing she would preach in sermons pretty much is you should not judge people because you never know what people are working through.
Mm-hmm.
I find that to be very true because, again, you know, you start from yourself. And then you think about what you're going through. It's like, you know what? It's enough for me to keep up with me. And, you know, you just don't know what people are going through. Because, again, you look at surfaces, somebody can look perfectly fine on the outside and just be in turmoil within. So just, you know, no judgments, like whatever. The other piece of advice, I thought about this too, something my mother shared with, this was during one of my classes. And she shared, she said, rejection is God's protection. And you think about it, I said, you know, that's a really good one. Because I had to think, started thinking back of times where I might have gotten rejected for something. And at the time, you don't see it. But then you think about something that happened beyond that. It's like, oh my God, I was being protected from that. Mm. So it's like, I could see where that makes a lot of sense.
And what is your favorite self-care ritual or practice?
Other than, like I said, you know, pretty much the yoga stuff, because I'm one of those people. I am up very early in the morning. Let's just put it like this. If I wake up at 5 a.m., I've overslept. That's late for me.
You and me both. I'm an early bird as well.
Yeah. One of the big things I love making shakes. So it's just, I don't know, something about this. Like, it's just something. It's kind of meditative for me too. So again, I like playing with my Vitamix. And again, just that whole thing with making a shake, just caring for myself, for my being. And again, that I'm taking my health into my hands.
It's perfect. And what woman do you think represents her higher energetic resonance?
Okay, got the standard. I know a lot of your guests give Mama O, Oprah. think about, you know, think in terms of where she's come from, and especially like growing up in the U.S. and where she grew up. I didn't grow up. I'm not from Mississippi or anything, but I know about it. Mm. If you know anything about that area, and I mean, just not only from historical standpoint, but even just today. You know, just like her. And then again, at the, what's the one woman I mentioned? She's actually one of your fellow country women, Kimmy Nekpopo. She's one of the, she's a raw food chef, motivational speaker, all of that. I listened to a couple of her stories, and it's like everything that I've seen her in, it's like just the energy. It's like, and she has one of those interesting stories too, where it's like grew up in foster care, and it's like, wow. And so every time I see her in something, it's like, oh, okay. Mm. And two, she's one of those people, you know, she's a woman who wears her head shaved. So I just have this thing. Anytime I see a Black woman who wears her head shaved of her own accord, it's like, okay, there's something to that. Something to that, something to be said for that. Something to be said for not having a problem with yourself. Mm-hmm. And especially in this day and age of everybody's wearing extra hair, you know, just that whole, oh, I want to look, you know, look like everybody else. It's like just to be able to stand out on your own and be okay with it. That to me says a lot.
Mm. I oscillate between wanting it, shaving it off, growing it, shaving it off. It's been a lifelong of indecision, the hair thing. So in terms of yourself, what's mm-hmm. next for you? You said you wanted to expand your yoga knowledge. So what are you going to be doing next?
Yes, I am currently in the process of getting certified for 500 hours. So I am a 200 certified instructor. I am in the process of getting certified at 500 hours. I would like to, one of the main reasons why I'm doing this, a friend of mine who's also an instructor wants to go in the business together to start a school to certify instructors. And that's something I've been wanting to do for a while. Also, too, I'm ready to get back into teaching. So mm-hmm. I will look into doing that again in the fall. And also too, just wanting to, one of the things I've been really nervous about doing and starting to get past that. And I want to thank you for that, because I'm even just doing this podcast is a big thing for me, because I've been scared, like, oh my God, you know, how am I going to sound? You know, what do you think? Nobody's going to listen. And it's like, you know, everybody has a story. Everybody has a voice. Everybody deserves to, you know, use that voice to speak up. And everybody deserves to be heard. Mm. And I thought about that. I said, you know what? And that includes me.
Of course.
One of the things I want to do is I am going to do it. I just have to get off my butt and do it. I really would like to do some video shorts what I call some video shorts, what I call yoga shorts. And then I even came up with one. I did one little brief one for Instagram just to see how it felt for me and how it would look. And it came out okay. I got some pretty decent feedback on it. Just what I think of, just some things I think of, like hacks. They call it life hacks. Mm. Just some little things I think about. So, you know, just put it out there and see what happens. So, and again, I have a tendency to, you know, want everything to be perfect. Oh, I'm not going to do this till I get this, and this. And it's like, meantime, you know, 3 years later, it's never done. So it's mm-hmm. like, if I just get it out there to look decent, just get it out there. So that's what's next for me, just stepping up and not being scared to just be.
Yeah. If I can give you any testament from what I've been doing since I launched the podcast, is kind of just put it out there before you're ready. That's kind of what I did. It's like the idea came and then I just like really just rushed into it as well, and just kind of set myself like a really short deadline. And then I think I recorded 1 week, was like 8 or something podcasts in 1 week, and it's exhausting. So it, you know, it just seems like you're sitting and having a conversation, but I'm kind of Hitchcocking in my head, and if you, like, Hitchcock's one of my favorite directors.
Okay,
what's your favorite Hitchcock film? I know. So sorry, it's a terrible question, but I've put you on the spot now.
I think that's the top of my head, but yeah. I like his TV. I liked his TV series too.
Do you like early Hitchcock or Hollywood Hitchcock?
I'm not really sure.
That's when he kind of got color and things just went a little. So like early Hitchcock, he was still in the UK, did a lot of black and white stuff, and
I don't even know any color ones. Oh, a couple of them. Okay,
yeah, there was like Rear Window and everything like that. But then towards the latter, kind of like 68, like late 60s, something like that. Yeah, I think I've got not all of them, but I've got a good batch of DVDs, of Hitchcock DVDs. And even though I don't even have a DVD player, I don't have a DVD drive in my laptop, I've got no way to watch them. I'm going to hang on to them because no one's got them online. Netflix don't have them. No platform's got them. So I'm I'll get one another day because I've got some good DVDs. I like all the black and white, the old films, but yeah, Hitchcock. But the reference to Hitchcock was, the story was that when he was shooting a film, he was editing at the same time.
Okay, yeah.
So usually when I'm doing a podcast as well, I'm just, you know, kind of thinking about just kind of leading the story, the narrative of the podcast itself as well. I'm trying to steer it. And that in itself takes an extra layer of brain power on top of having a conversation, listening to what someone says, responding to that as well, so that I don't have to do too much work on the back end, really. Otherwise, it just kind of lengthens the time. But if anything, I just say, just do it. I've been looking at Instagram TV as well. They've got so much stuff on there. I was like really digging into the back end of Instagram today as well. You can put music on there. You can do all these kind of 3D drawings and everything like that. There's a lot. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. And it's great that technology gives us all this platform, which then, you know, gives us our voice so that we can actually start to find the people that resonate with us as well. And you never know who's listening or who's not listening. It feels like a big void, but sometimes you just have to press send and then get on with the next one. That's just the best way that if I can give you any advice at all, it's just like, just press send and then just go into the next one. Don't even worry about it.
Okay, yeah, keep that in mind. Thank you.
And then sometimes, you know, you'll start to get feedback, and it's always a shock, you know, when someone's like, yeah, I really like that one. It really spoke to me. It's like, I'm just always thinking, I'm just building. I just want to speak to the most interesting women out there. And I thought it'd be interesting to speak to you as a listener who mm-hmm. comments, and we have like a little communication now and again, just to find out who's listening and then who the women are that listening and what they're doing in their life as well. Cause I think it'd be interesting to kind of break down that barrier as well. Cause usually you're just pushing out content and feeding everyone, but it's like, who's listening? What are you doing? It's mm-hmm. nice to invite them on and have that conversation with them as well. So I appreciate you and thank you.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate you and I thank you.
No problem. Do you want to put your information out there? I'm giving you the opportunity.
Oh, sure.
Sure. So where can people find you?
Okay. I do have a website. The website is yogachivibration.com. That is yogachivibration.com. Instagram, I am Chi Yoga She. That's QIYOGASHE. Facebook, Yoga She. That's Yoga Space She. And Twitter, at Yoga She 1.
That's it. That's us today. Thank you so much for having the conversation with me as well, She. And thanks for listening and always giving me feedback on how you're connecting with each of them as well. It helps because I put it out there, I don't know. You know.
Oh yeah, not only that, I know that our numbers are important. So it's like, you know what? Any way I can help, here to support. And I thank you for having me on your show. I'm truly honored.
Thank you.
Thank you again to She for making the transition from listener to interviewee on the podcast. I really enjoyed finding out how the podcast has been received. As I said, when I press send, it's gone and I don't really know what's happening until I get any feedback, if ever I do. So I really appreciate your continued support and also your willingness to open up and be part of her conversations. If you need to find out anything more about me, my website is carolmaewittick.com. That's carolmaewittick.com. And you can find me on Facebook under that name and also on Twitter and Instagram under Kazmik, CAZMICK. So thank you for joining me for another podcast episode. And until the next one next week, take care.